got it. Here we go.
Lahar, huh?
Yeah.
That's a good porn name. That's a hot wall of toxic mud, Tom. Coming at you.
It's a good what name?
Porn name, Lahar.
What the heck?
I don't know. Just...
John's planning him for an ultimate career here after he leaves radio.
Where see, your that, mind goes.
No. Having sex, that's a Google search thing. You can put your name in and it comes up with a... Come on now. I can't keep you kids up to date on pop culture.
You're as red...
I'm in a wagon.
You're red. As red as you were when you're on that drug.
I still have
as red as he was in the hot tub, did you say?
Hey, I'm in the middle of a radio show and there's a wagon and Tom is in the wagon. And a horse is standing. Shush! Lahar. Starring Lahar.
Showing nightly, 9 to midnight.
Hey, he's a hot wall of mud. All right. That's so funny to see Ursula's reaction. Yeah. She runs out of here. So many sheets of paper now.
What?
New producer. Hold on. Is this it? Oh, here we go. So Bobby Ferguson, who wants to be the next governor, every couple of months fires off a lawsuit so he can keep his name out there, and he's got a new one going after Facebook.
The volume of money going to Facebook, Google for political advertising, it's only going one direction. It's increasing. They have an obligation to be transparent about who's purchasing advertisements on Facebook and on Google, and right now they're not doing it. The public has the right to walk into Facebook and say, I want to see who's paying for all the political advertising, and Facebook has to keep those records and Google available on site. This is not some academic pursuit, right? Millions of dollars are being spent on ads for Facebook and Google. The public should know who's buying those ads.
You know, so crazy, as high tech as it is to advertise on digital media, you know what they're going to send you in order to verify you? A postcard. So what Facebook said back in February, that if you want to advertise, if you want to run an ad that is political and it's mentioning a candidate, okay, this is according to Kate Haubarth, Facebook Director of Global Politics and Government Outreach at a conference for the National Association of Secretaries of State. She says, we're going to mail you a postcard and you will have to use a code that proves that you are in the United States. So the postcard comes to your house and you have to have a home in the United States. And then once you fill that out with your postcard, then we'll let you advertise. So that way we know who you are, as opposed to having outside sources being involved in American campaigns.
Okay. But that's not right now. They're not challenging who is advertising. They want, you know, these two lawsuits that are being brought against them they're challenging the fact that we don't have that information. This is like the next step. This is like, oh, that's a bogus person. You shouldn't have had, this is just transparency. There were something like 5,000 ads used. We want to know what those ads are, because we've had a longstanding, since I think 1972, we've had this longstanding campaign finance law. And even though Facebook and the internet didn't exist in terms of the communication principles, TV ads, TV stations have to do this, radio stations have to do this, and now they say the web outlets have to do this as well, and they haven't. So Ferguson has got on board suing them. Now he's open, he says, to negotiations with them.
Good.
They don't need to go to trial. But you were saying that this is just his effort to try to keep his name in the news. Actually, right. not really. In this particular case, he was. It's a bit like the way the legislature acts when you get an initiative that's thrown their way. There is a guy who they call him an aspiring law student. I don't know if that means he isn't a law student yet. He's a 25-year-old who made these Freedom of Information requests and didn't get anything from these two companies. And so he pitched it to the attorney general. The attorney general has to then act within 55 days to see if he wants to be party to the suit or not. So he was sort of called on this. And he said, well, actually, that's exactly right, that they are not responding, and we have to get a response from them. And Facebook and Google have given out, claims. Oh, we're very transparent, and we want to work with the attorney general. So we'll see how this gets addressed.
This media, Tom, is to be able to determine what is a political ad and what isn't a political ad. So let's say that you.
I don't think that's the issue.
That's part of not on this case with Bobby Ferguson, okay. Little Bobby Ferguson. No, this is just generally
Tall Robert.
You call him Tall Robert?
Well, if you're going to call him Little Bobby, there's
Little Bobby.
Little about him.
Well, he's not a big man.
You.
No, he's not taller than me. I've stood next to him. I skied on him. Sky towered on him.
In your high-heeled boots.
No, nobody challenges Lahar. It is an interesting piece that was written. I think the Wall Street Journal had it. Was it? How do you determine? So, what is political and what isn't political? Mm. Sure, it's obvious. Hey, vote for Joe Smith, right? You put up an ad. That's easy. But let's say that you are a university and you want to advertise something in the university, but the university is also doing research on minimum wage and it's receiving some funds regarding minimum wage, which is being paid for by an organization that might have a left or right leaning slant. So then it's like, well, is the university involved in politics? If they're also advertising, is that a political ad? Because you can find almost just about everything to be political. So you have to start slicing and dicing. And the definition of what will become a political ad for the internet will be something that they will all have to wrestle with.
Okay, maybe. At this point, it's just pretty cut and dried. This is for, like, the mayoral race.
Yes.
The number of ads for Jenny Durkin as opposed to Nikita Oliver, these kinds of
and
things.
And I have no problem. The public should know who you are if you're putting the ad out there. Yeah. And they make all those things really easy when it comes to advertising on radio
and television.
This portion. Slide that thing in at the end.
Yep.
Apple has decided they want to kick Facebook in the crotch on this one. They're going to give you an opportunity to not have your information tracked. And here is the Apple software chief, Craig. How would you say his last name? You know what you do? You don't say it. Okay. Talking about how they're going to stop Facebook from getting your info.
We've all seen these like buttons and share buttons and these comment fields. Well, it turns out these can be used to track you, whether you click on them or not. And so this year, we are shutting that down. Now, if you do want to interact with one of these or one of these apps tries to access that information, you'll get this.
It's a ball peen hammer, and you can use it to hit your computer with. And Apple's going to be selling these. No, you get this. It's a little button that's up at the top of the screen from Safari that basically says,
and you can decide to keep your information private.
Yeah. And then you just put don't allow. And don't allow doesn't allow you to track
them. Don't allow. And the weird thing is, as they say, before this thing, and it's going to be in their new operating system, before that, whether you said yes or no, they would still keep track of you. That really didn't have any purpose. They used to track you whether you clicked on them or not. I mean, that's the disturbing thing about it. So Apple is just saying, okay, you know what? We're going to allow you. Now, it'll force people to use the Safari web browser. Mm-hmm. But they say once Apple does this, then maybe a lot of the other web browsers will do that as well. And it may protect our privacy one little bit.
Where are you on that? Do you care if anybody sees what you're looking at?
Well, I don't enough. I'm with that. Remember we did the story last week where they say you really should read all the fine print because you are, by doing these things, you're allowing them access to all sorts of stuff that you don't really want them to have access to, but none of us can be bothered. And I feel like, oh, cripes, I got to read this thing to say, where's the no button? But it's not, usually it's not worth my time. So I don't care, and I feel like I should care more that they are doing this.
I had to tell you something. Because I just don't like Facebook just generally. I don't like the fact that they sell the data. And I never go on. I hardly ever get on.
Yeah.
Right. We're terrible about that. We'd like to apologize to anybody that follows us on Facebook.
That's right.
We're horrible. But on Saturday mornings, I read the Wall Street Journal. And if I finish an article at the end of the Wall Street Journal and the guy's name is on there or the woman's name is on there, I'll write to them. And I will.
With a quill. Pen, right?
Right. No. I just write to them. I just said, hey, I just want to tell you, I've really enjoyed the article. You made my, one day I wrote, share this with you.
Yeah.
I finished a really beautiful article and I just wrote to the guy, thanks for making my Saturday morning. I'm having a cup of coffee and really enjoying your work. And within an hour, the guy wrote back, well, thanks a lot. What a wonderful message to receive. I too have finished my coffee this morning and I look forward to you reading my next article. So I was like, holy cow, the guys at the Wall Street Journal just wrote me back.
Yeah.
And then you realize we, Tom, have the same power.
I know. And we don't.
And we don't do anything.
I feel terrible.
I do too. So occasionally, like a basket full of puppies, I pick one up and cuddle it, and then I put it back down again. So every once in a while, I go to the message. Is it Messenger? Yeah. Is that what it's called?
Facebook Messenger?
Yeah. I go to that thing. Yeah. And I find somebody, and I pluck them out of obscurity, and I write to them, hey, thanks. I'm glad you enjoy the show. I'll tell Tom to kiss your ass. So there you go. But we don't do enough of it.
No, I feel bad.
Not enough to do anything about it.
No.
But you feel bad.
I'm too busy? No, I don't even see them. I mean, the thing on Facebook, I don't even see. Unfortunately, I just had a birthday. You know, they tell you, "Hey, you got a notice from all these people because they, you know, hey, right. your birthday is up." And it's like, they're really nice things, but I just.
So anyway, I went there the other day to look, and sure enough, the ads start popping up.
Oh yeah,
and I hate to admit it, but an ad for a beautiful leather men's satchel came up, and it was worked tooled leather.
Yeah,
and it had that kind of. Looked like it had been around for a long time.
Yeah, you had your monogram.
I hated the fact that it popped up.
Yeah,
and then I was like,
"You ordered it."
I ordered it. I was like, "See,
you will never lose that account now."
I know.
I mean, all that does is encourage people.
How many leather sort of man bags do I need? Oprah Winfrey scoops up an $8 million estate in Orcas Island. Now, if I were still at Evening Magazine, we would be out there interviewing the realtor and the neighbors about Oprah coming to town and making some joke about you get a car and you get a car and you get a car. Where is the estate, Tom? And what part of Orcas Island is it on? Do we know?
Well, it's called the Gallery House. It's a 3,000 square foot 1980s contemporary guest house with four bedrooms and three bathrooms. It's two adjoining properties. What I think is interesting about it is that they were bought by two separate entities that they connected, the San Juan paper, I think, connected to, it's Oprah, but she was like buying up. So I don't know why, but a little hidden purchase. Beyond that, they say it's a private compound and you don't really have access to it. But it does look out on, I think, the west side of the island.
And is she going to come to town?
Dubbed the Madrona Eagle Estate by its previous owner.
Huh.
43 acres, 3,000 feet of unspoiled west-facing shoreline overlooking the island's East Sound. So.
Yeah, we would be waiting. Please call us when she comes to town so we can go do a story on her. How many celebrities do we have left in the Northwest? I know Steve Miller had a great big place out there, Friday Harbor.
Oh, yeah, that's he was sale. Selling, yeah.
Yeah, my friends actually has that listing.
Is that right? Yeah.
I think it's 30-some million bucks or something like that. So out Miller goes a long time ago, but Oprah may or may not be coming to town, but they're in Orcas Island. Let's see. It is the best way to avoid regrets. This is a absolutely fascinating story.
Yeah.
Determining how you're supposed to see regrets in your life and divide them into two categories. And we always make the mistake of looking at regrets the wrong way.
Yeah, both of us love counterintuitive stories. Yeah. And so, this to me is a real counterintuitive version. They say, okay, what kind of regrets do we have? And he divided it up into two. You have regrets based on your ideal self. And this is if you fulfilled all of your goals and your ambitions, what would that, how would you be manifesting yourself that way? And then you have the ought self, O-U-G-H-T, the person you'd be if you met all of your obligations to others and lived a morally upright life. And they say, okay, between those two, like the aspiration, John, you at your best professionally, you know, in terms of what you always wanted to do in life, do you have more regrets over that, or do you have more regrets about how you didn't really live up to your ethical or moral obligations? Let's say your mother or your aunt or your grandmother or somebody say died, but you didn't really, you could have visited her more often, or if you had some kind of like an affair or something, somehow you didn't live up. I would assume that most people would regret that ought self, that all these obligations, I should have done more with my kids when they were growing up and stuff. But they say, no, it's just the opposite. You have the worst regrets are the ones about your ideal self. That those ambitions that I should have gone into, whatever, movies, or I should have tried to become a singer, or I should have done. Your professional and sort of ambitions about your ideal self are more important, and you have bigger regrets. Why is that? Because on the odd self, we already do take actions on that. Because they seem more more present, we already try to make ourselves better. So if we didn't visit our grandmother enough, we can always visit our aunts and uncles or visit with our kids.
Yes, we can adjust that.
We can do that, and we tend to do that. But it's the big things like, I should have gone to law school or medical school or something that has already passed you by. Your regrets are smaller. They're in the background, but they eat and gnaw away at you. So it's better to have actually tried to do things, to fulfill your ideal self, because you'll have more regrets over that than you regret.
Do you have
about
any regrets? I always hear about people. Yeah. I asked my dad when he was dying, any regrets? No, no regrets.
Yeah.
Hey, Frank Sinatra song, regrets, I've got a few.
Yeah, I've got
but then again, too few to mention.
Yeah. Well, no. So for me, I think whatever regrets I have, now that I am in my 60s and I look at my kids and they're, you know, happily ensconced in their 20s and they're adults, mm-hmm. I now regret not spending more time with them when I was, you know, when they were kids.
Yeah.
Not that I abandoned them. I didn't spend time, but I wish I could recapture those moments. And so I think my ought self, I think, is what I regret more than my ideal self. My ideal self, in terms of ambitions, I was going to get my PhD and be an English professor.
Yeah.
But the life I've got now is every bit as good, if not better, than the life I would have had if I had gotten the PhD and been
right.
teaching. So
it's like a quilt, Tom. If you remove one or two strands, your life takes an entirely different direction.
Exactly. And right now, I don't feel like there are any things that I ended up doing mostly what I want to do. And you, no regrets?
No regrets. You know, it's funny. Somebody connected the other day for me. They said, because you cheated off of Jim Farley in the SATs and got caught and got rejected from all those colleges, you were forced to try out for a high school play. You had never done theater before. And you were forced to do the play, and then you were in the play, and then you got cast into a theater school. And then from there, you started your career in television and radio. Because you cheated on Jim Farley at an SAT. So you realize how all of your life sort of dominoes in one direction or another, and then you end up somewhere and go, well, here I am.
Yes.
My greatest regret is the fact that I never bought a cabin somewhere in Eastern Washington to drag the kids to, as opposed to standing on a stupid field in Redmond and watching them kick each other in the shins playing soccer for 7 or 8 years. We were going to have this home where we take the family and have family memories and have like an old boat and go fishing and everything. Mm-hmm. But no, we can't because Charlie's got a soccer game this weekend. And now she doesn't play soccer and Rye doesn't play soccer. We established no family traditions. And to me, I regret that.
Yeah. Okay. See, that's something. But that's your odd self.
Yes, it is.
See, but the whole article is how we ought to go the other way, because they say unpursued dreams have a tendency to stay in the background, gnawing at you only quietly until suddenly it's too late.
Yes.
Because right now you could say, well, I still got my kids. We can still do things. Sure, they're teenagers.
No, they don't want to go anywhere with you.
I know, but force them, damn it. No. No, I mean, I still think it's not too late to repair the kind of regrets you have about not creating family traditions by creating more family traditions now. You still have that chance, I suppose.
Not the same.
That's true. So a man who
met
no
somebody
regrets,
who did that.
Full regrets. Yeah.
The guy told me, he said, we bought a cabin, I think in Chelan or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he goes, and every weekend I forced my kids, even, you know, they reached like 10, 11, 12. Like, no, I want to hang out with, you know, Dougie.
Yeah.
He's like, nope. You're going.
Yeah.
The three kids. And they hate him. No. It all worked out.
Yeah. No, I think it's good. We're lucky we have this family.
I know you've got a big compound and everybody goes there.
No, we don't. There's no
lobster.
Running water. It falls apart. But the thing is, we've got every August we've spent time there. And so that's a family tradition. Even though my kids live on the East Coast, they try to come back in August for Whidbey.
Sit to it. Right. Yeah. By the way, the story we didn't get to yesterday, and I don't think we're going to get to it today, is the crayfish that saved its own life. You've heard this story? Did you see it, Jacob?
Yeah, I love this story.
Me too.
Yeah, okay.
Let's slide it in there somewhere.
Okay.
We'll be right back. Tom and Curly Show right here on Cairo Radio.
From Ballard to Fremont.
Close. All righty, here we go. You write to us at mynorthwest.com. You get text as well at 98973. Second day in a row for Jacob, the new young producer that we've got on board. That's right.
Day two.
That's what I said to him when I came in this morning. Oh, look, this new guy showed up again. That was always the worst part of getting in a new job, you know, like a crappy job, is that no one ever bothered to know your name, so they would just call you by the color of your shirt. It was the worst thing. Hey, green shirt. I'm like, oh, that's me. Because yesterday I was red shirt.
Yeah.
Hey, red shirt, can you get over here and lift this up? Like, my name's John. And they don't care. They don't. Your summer job, the people come and go. They just call you by your shirt. Hey, balloon pants or something like that. This happened, I think, yesterday, Tom. I don't know how we missed it, but a guy was eating some seafood in China, and crayfish. Apparently, in China, they love crayfish.
Yeah, they're all the rage.
Right. Everybody wants little teeny tiny little lobsters, little litty bitty lobsters. The guy happened to have his camera out and on his phone, and he was taking video of this one crayfish that was right on the edge of this boiling pot of water, this soup that was consuming and killing all of his brethren. And the one crayfish is right on the corner of the little bowl.
That's right.
And he does something quite dramatic.
The thing is, it must have happened in the kitchen, because they say it was being prepared in a Chinese kitchen, and they threw a bunch of crayfish into this hot boiling water, obviously. And there was one crayfish that managed to get caught on the lip of the container, and he's struggling there, trying to pull his, you know, as you know, crayfish have these big, heavy arms with the like the pinchers or whatever they are. Mm-hmm. And one, he was having trouble getting one out of the hot boiling water. It seemed like it was blowing up. And so what he did was, do we have any sound of this?
No, there's no sound.
Okay, no sound. After he sort of gives up, he has the one arm out of the hot water and the other arm in the boiling water. So he uses his one good arm and he clips off the arm that's in boiling water and scrambles away.
Yes.
So in other words, he saves his life by cutting off his arm. Remind me of that 127 Hours movie that was made about the guy who got his arm lodged between rocks and he ended up having to cut off his arm. Here's a crayfish that did it and it saved his life.
And after posting it, a guy named Juki got more than a million shares and people have said, hey, you can't eat that thing.
That's
and
right.
He'd already decided he was going to bring it home and put it in an aquarium and save it. So I was giving a lot of credit to the crayfish.
Yes.
And then I find out, they can grow their arm back. So then it's like, I'm sorry, I'm going to take some credit back from you if you can cut your own arm off and have it grow back. Because who wouldn't do that? I would be doing that for cocktail party trips all the time. Hey, everybody, I'm going to saw right through it. See you next week with it grown back. But I have to say, it's interesting that the pot was filled with a whole bunch of other guys. Nobody cared about saving any of their lives. You know what it is? People like a winner.
The industrious one who's willing to go that extra mile. Up his own arm. It is pretty spectacular, and he does it so efficiently. Just like one little snip, and it's gone.
Because how many times has he done it before? Probably 50.
that's right.
Oh, wow. And he's like, I don't know why they're making a big deal about it. I did it 2 weeks ago. The crayfish, by the way, somebody had written, I saw Washington posted a thing, and you put a comment in it. Why someone bothers to comment on a story like that? Mm-hmm. Somebody, just wait and see what that crayfish does to a minnow. So apparently when the crayfish go nuts on other fish or something, how they eat them, and no one's going to save the minnow. And then somebody else responds, crayfish and lobster should not be boiled alive because they feel pain. And then somebody else would no, but that sound is not them screaming. That's the sound of moisture leaving their joints as they hit the boiling water. And then somebody else responds going, no, they feel pain.
Yeah. No, that's the argument. And I do think it's terrible. The reason we do cook them alive, boil them alive, is because if we don't do that, they have some kind of poisonous reaction and it ruins the meat that we're after. It's like this horrible dilemma.
Oh, it is such a horrible dilemma.
Well, it is. I mean, I feel terrible. I've cooked a crab. I had to boil a crab alive, and it bothered the heck of me. I had my daughters crying in the cabin. They thought it was so mean, and I do. It's terrible, but it's the only way we can protect the crab meat.
Oh, interesting.
It's awful. Well,
may I, Andrew, cross-examine the witness?
Yes.
Just moments ago, you mentioned that there's no running water at the cabin, but yet, somehow, you were able to get wet water to put into a crab pot and then boil a crab. But no running water.
No, we have no running water. You clearly have never been to our cabin.
No, I have not. Don't even text me.
We bring it in. When I was a kid, we used to bring them up in glass, gallon jugs.
Yes.
And we would have like 25 of these things that would take up half the car when we were packing. And then we go through them. Now it's so much easier because you can go into the store and buy your little plastic,
containers.
Gallons. But yes,
we
carry it in.
You may
and
step
we
down.
Carry it out.
You may step down. It's a problem with our attention span. They're going to make big changes to tennis. I cannot imagine that anybody cares about this, but it
really?
Is a big deal.
Okay.
That it goes on too long and people don't want to sit for 3 hours and watch people play tennis.
How about 5 hours and 53 minutes?
Is that the longest one that's been out there?
Yeah. That is the Marathon 2012 Australian Open final between Nadal and Djokovic. And it was an unbelievable event. But they say that it's just people. They've talked the same way about golf, too. People don't have time to play 18 holes of golf. So what happens when we play like 9 holes of golf? The competition is such, do people really want to sit in the sun when it's blazing hot in these Grand Slam tournaments? Women's tournaments are, a women's competition, they're three. It's best of three. Men are best of five. So there's a lot of consideration about TV audiences aren't staying with it. People don't want to sit there that long. We've got shorter attention spans. Can we speed the game of tennis up? We're always talking about baseball speeding it up. Can you speed it up with the tennis? So right now, no one is suggesting that any of the Grand Slams change their habits.
Yes.
Because those are like the cream of the crop. You don't want to change any of those. But they think that there are some options. One is maybe you shouldn't have the five set matches. Maybe you should only have three sets. That the women seem to be equally as popular as the men.
Mm-hmm.
Why do we make the men do extra 2 hours?
And
possibly?
They're going to get rid of lets, which is on the serve, if the ball clips the top of the net and then punches in.
That's right. It's
that like that ball would be in play.
Yes.
Normally, if you touch the net, and there's the guy that sits on the other side of the net with his finger right on top of it.
That's all he does.
And that's all he does is he feels the touch of the ball hitting the top of the net and calls let.
Okay, so this is something called Fast Four, which is a version of tennis that's being promulgated in Australia for a certain of the cups, and that's one of the things that they're considering. But going back to this idea of, well, should we cut it from a best of five to best of three? The other version is, no, let's keep it at best of five, but let's make it four-game, sets. In other words, the set, you say you have to win six.
Yes.
And if you have to win by two, and so you need, you can play infinite numbers of rounds. So they're just suggesting that. And I just think it's interesting that our time span and how our interest is such that maybe it's affecting the game, sports in a way. They are considering the U.S. Open, I didn't realize this, has a shot clock now to make sure that they don't take too long between serves.
Uh-huh.
We do have a fifth set tiebreaker that they never used to have. So the U.S. Open is a little more open to some of these things. Wimbledon, they say, is obviously the most stated.
Remember watching tennis with my parents.
Yeah, is that right?
Sitting there in front of the television set watching Jimmy Connors or somebody
McEnroe.
Else scream McEnroe.
Yeah, Bjorn Borg, those guys.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, by the way, the kid in Britain's first word, baby's first word.
I love this.
This kid's in trouble because if his parents are saying this so many times, it's sad that this child utters this first.
No, but I got a happy ending to this seemingly sad story.
Really?
Are we...
I just throw it in now. We're out of time. Go ahead.
So his first word wasn't mama. It wasn't data.
Yeah.
It was Alexa. And they said, however, that was 18 months ago. He's now 18 months and he's no longer interested in Alexa, has no interest in screens. He now is mostly interested in traditional toys. And he says, so this is actually a good story that you're afraid, if we become so automated that these kids will not know how to operate in real world.
Yes.
Now he's bored by the device.
Okay.
So that's a good thing.
There we go. All works out. Coming right back with your letters. You can write to us at mynorthwest.com. Text as well at 98973. One of you gets your chance to be letter of the day. That'll put a skip in your step right after this. All right, Doug's Linwood Mazda, thanks for being a sponsor. Appreciate that. You're taking care of the mailman by giving him a brand new Mazda every single week. When the mailman returns the Mazda, Tom, as Doug's Linwood Mazda says, it's cleaner than when they gave it to him. How's he managing that? Here he comes now with a happy tune to sing about the letters he's bringing to us. Hey, mailman.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman. If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
Right to your door.
My predicament is I live in Portland.
That's right. We're going to get the teeny tiny lady. By the way, a big fight over the weekend in Portland. Did you see that?
I heard.
Patriot Prayer.
Yeah,
all sorts of stuff. Dory had on the leader of Patriot Prayer.
That was a Gibson. Surprise.
Hello!
Hey, hi. Sorry there, teeny tiny lady. I see you over there. She's going to tell us about the letter of the day. Let's get started.
Speaking of protesters,
360
suggests, hey, who wants to join me in laying in traffic to abolish hemorrhoids? Are you guys in?
Me, I am. I don't like those piles any more than the next guy. 425. Someone needs to make a giant forklift that can lift the sleeping dragon.
And 971. Curly, you crack me up.
Oh, shush.
Your impression of a Home Depot employee is sadly spot on.
Yep.
But I don't think these protesters have a life or a job or would be able to pay for anything. I think they live in their parents' basement and probably steal their dad or mom's material to build their protesting tools.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Howard Schultz, Allison in Seattle, says, Tom, I'd take a boring, intelligent, aware person as president over Trump's ignorant, arrogant charisma any day.
She's referencing Howard Schultz. Here, 206. Let's not forget how he had zero backbone when dealing with the Seattle City Council regarding an arena deal.
425. Have a bet with my son. Howard will run as VP with Cory Booker from New Jersey.
I can see that as a possibility. 206. Almost every presidential election in my life has been won by the more charismatic candidate. No to Schultz. Yes to The Rock.
There you go. Howard Schultz running for president. If this was planned, I'd have to guess it was planned by Donald Trump to begin poisoning the presidential competition pool as early as possible. Sean in Arlington.
On the bikes issue, 425, I work in the Seattle area. I've never seen anyone riding those bikes down the road. I do often see them in the homeless trash piles and on the side of the freeway.
Mm-hmm. 206, John, there is a city council law to wear a helmet, but when they took the crooked contract from Lime Bike, they, quote, chose not to enforce, close quote.
360, what do you mean share bikes not in southwest Seattle? Those share bikes are littered all over Lincoln Park.
And 206 says, if you haven't ridden a Lime e-bike, it's a sweet ride. As an avid 60-year-old male cyclist, the non-motorized bikes are heavy and clunky and don't fit tall folks. The e-bikes give the perfect gentle assist to any hill in Seattle. Safe, keep the scooters away.
Ah, there you go. On marriage, 253. Been married for 18 years. It all boils down to one thing. You got to love your spouse just a little more than you hate them.
There you go. 253, a woman just needs to be heard. They need to actually be listened to and then understand what they're saying. Maybe if we did a better job as men listening to women, they wouldn't drag us to couples therapy to begin with.
There you go. On the paddy wagon issue.
You said that again. Can we just call it the pee wagon?
425. As an Irishman, I choked on my Irish car bomb with rage when I heard the usage of paddy wagon by Ursula this morning.
Yeah, me too. 253 says the same thing. I'm Irish, and so help me. As soon as I finish this lovely pint of Guinness, I'm going to do something. And I am supposed to be upset about
what
again?
What am I supposed to be upset about again?
That's right.
On Philly and Philadelphia, Dell and Linwood, I would have loved to see five Philadelphia players show up and two of them kneel during this stupid thing.
Scotty in Seattle says, more Keystone State accent from Curly. Please, it really is a show high point that unites in these divisive times.
Yeah. And 425, Curly's Philly guy is the most annoying thing I've ever heard broadcast.
Hey, really? I don't think so. If you listen to talk radio in Philadelphia, it's what everybody sounds like. Hey, how about live stream video? Jim and Elma says, Tom, get some sleep. I watched you yawn four times in the first minute I got online. What's wrong?
I don't know.
Why are you doing that in the middle of the show? Why are you yawning?
I'm listening to John. What do you expect?
Oh, I hardly say anything.
North Korea McDonald's, 206. McDonald's. How about food, water, and internet first?
And Feeling Disgust 360 says, if the open sore theory was valid, I would have stopped listening to the Tom and Curly show long ago.
Ouch. And on Miss America 253, regarding Miss America, excuse me, I don't recall Arnie or Lou playing a piano, singing, or answering questions about world events, and I'm guessing their swimsuits were half the size of any modern bar bikini.
And we know who they're talking about. Lou Ferrigno and Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And now it is time for the letter of the day.
Eric from Bothell, once been famous by the show. We are unable to get to your letter today.
That's right, among other people. Letter of the day is from Larry M. in West Seattle.
Oh, boy.
Regarding the bike share programs, considering the bike design was stolen from the KGB, colors from one of Tom's obscure European films, and they end up outside on the streets, my crew and I opt for electric scooters. We have one fear, seeing Curly whizzing by with a skull cap with a propeller.
Bye.